Seed Perimeter once again. It's always a pleasure to visit here. Yeah, I'm going to talk about this work I did with Arkady Seidlin from Imperial College that appeared already in this preprint, maybe some slight work in progress. So let me discuss what the talk is about. So I'm going to start with an introduction and a very brief introduction to the string gauge theory duality. And this is also part of the introduction, a reminder of the relation between local operators and Wilson loops. Perhaps the most well-known case is the relation between twist two operators and the Lie-like cusps, which involves long strings or far from BPS states. And but much of ADS-CFT was learned from short or near BPS strings. So one might think that it would be interesting to look at if there is some similar relation between operators, local operators, and Wilson loops for short strings. And people have suggested many interesting facts that this is true, that there is some sort of relation. And then I'm going to say that it may be worthwhile exploring a simple relation that one can find between short strings and Wilson loop, which is to use a T-duality that maps strings that cross the horizon of an extremal horizon of a Poincaré patch. T-duality maps that to a Wilson loop. And that is a very simple way to relate short strings or local operators to Wilson loops. And we suggest that it will be worth exploring. And so we did that. We discussed some simple examples. One is a trivial example of a massless string moving away from the boundary, a point-like string, along a Lie-like geodesic in ADS. And then a slightly less trivial is the BMM vacuum. So both these are BPS states in the bulk. And when you treat duality, they map each to a Wilson loop, which is also BPS. And then we say, OK, it would be interesting to study such kind of Wilson loops. And we study fluctuations of this point-like string and this Landau-Lifshitz model that describes some oscillations around the BMM vacuum. And one can see that those two things, the same as appear here, they appear in the Wilson loop side as a way to compute Wilson loops which are slightly oscillating. They could be oscillating in space, like the quark is oscillating, or they could be oscillating on the phi sphere. So these Wilson loops have a boundary condition related to orientation in a sphere, which is the S5 of ADS5, and that can change also along the Wilson loop. And those are related to, for example, this Landau-Lifshitz model. So, and then I'm going to give some conclusions. Okay, so I guess we all know there is a relation between gauge theory and string theory. There is a Toft coupling. Now, when the coupling is small, the gauge theory is a good description. And when the coupling is large, the string theory is a good description. And in the example I'm going to describe, use that is the most well known, the strings live in curved space, which is ADS5 cross S5. S5, I'm going to use these embedding coordinates, the phi sphere, and ADS5 in this hyperbolic space are these coordinates. And this, as we know, was proposed by Maldacena. And he gave a very precise relation between this gauge theory and string theory, that this type of relation was a dream or suggested by Toft, Polyakov, and many others. But this is a very precise case where it works. Where you have an equal force super Young Mills and type 2B on ADS5 cross S5, there is a relation between the parameters. And this string theory sums all the planar diagrams of this theory, for example, in the Toft limit. And this lambda that I mentioned before is a Toft coupling. OK, so I guess we all know this, but let me go a little bit slowly because I'm going to use these coordinates many times. So there are two main coordinates that we use in ADS. One is global coordinates, and another is Poincaré coordinates. The boundary of global coordinates is R cross S3, and the boundary of Poincaré is R3,1. And the field theory lives in the boundary matrix. So type 2B on global coordinates is dual to R cross S3, field theory in R cross S3, and on Poincaré, dual to field theory on R3,1. And in Euclidean signature, the Poincaré and the Euclidean patch are the same. But in Minkowski, they are different. The Poincaré patch only covers part of the space and has a horizon, a past and a future horizons. And this is the metric in global coordinates, and this is the metric in Poincaré. And if you want to draw a picture, usually you change to coordinates is psi that grow from 0 to pi over 2, so rho grows from 0 to infinity. But this is finite. The metric is like this, and you can just draw ADS as a cylinder where this is time, this is psi, and this is a three sphere. And there are two planes, which are the past and future horizons of the Poincaré patch. The Poincaré patch is inside here. The boundary is the boundary of this cylinder, but the boundary of the Poincaré patch is just a diamond, which is a Penrose diagram from flat space. So this is R3,1 in here. Okay, so this is well known, but I want to use it this several times. Then, how does it work? As we know, the correspondence, there is a correspondence between string states and local operators. So if you have a string moving inside global ADS, moving inside here, the ADS-CFT correspondence maps that to a state of the field theory in the three sphere. And then for this is a conformal theory, there is a state operator correspondence that gives you a local operator for the field theory in R3,1. And this is a very well-known example that I'm going to use later, which is, let me call it the BMN geodesic. So if you have a massless point-like string moving at the speed of light inside the space, and let's say sitting at the center and moving in time, so it's here at the middle, like that, that will be like a massive geodesic, but it's massless because it's moving on the phi sphere that I didn't represent there, along a maximum circle, as you see here, at the speed of light. And this very simple string state corresponds to a trace of x to the j, where x is a complex scalar in the field theory, and this j and curly j are related by the square root of lambda. So it's like the semi-classical j, and this is the integer. So for this to work, this j has to be very large, so this is a finite number. Okay, so this is perhaps one of the most well-known examples of relation between a particular string in the bulk and an operator in the boundary, and gave rise to a lot of developments, as we know. Other type of operators are the Wilson loops. So the Wilson loops are associated with a curve in the field theory, and just the holonomy of the integral of the gauge field around that. But in this supersymmetric series, we add something with the scalars. The theta A of S is a vector that can change along the contour. And these are the scalars of the theory. And this has the property that each piece of the Wilson loops, the Wilson loop is supersymmetric, although the whole Wilson loop is not supersymmetric, but each piece is invariant under a different supersymmetry. And if you want to compute the expectation value of this using string theory, you have to put this in the boundary of the space and find a minimal area surface that ends in that contour. And the most and the area of the surface gives you the expectation value of the, well, the e to the area, the expectation value of the Wilson loop. And the most well-known example is a circular Wilson loop that is described by a half sphere as a dual surface. And a conformal transformation maps the circle to a straight line. For a straight line, the surface is just a half plane ending at the boundary and has this simple equation, t equals tau, let's say along this line, and z, which is the vertical direction, equals sigma. And this is a straight line Wilson loop. This is supersymmetric Wilson loop and has expectation value 1. And one can ask if there is a relation between the two types of observables. There doesn't have to be, but there could be a relation between operators and Wilson loops. And this was pointed out, at least in, I think, one of the most well-known examples by Korchensky and Marchesini in QCD, that there is a relation between the twist, large spin twist two operators and the light-like cast Wilson loop. Now, what are the twist twin operators? I'm going to describe in the next slide, but they are important in QCD because they dominate deep inelastic scattering. And a Wilson loop with a cusp has an anomalous dimension, and that was pointed out by Polyakov. And these two seem to be related. And what they point out is when the two lines that have a form a cusp is a jump in the tangent, this angle goes to infinity, which happens when the two lines become light-like. The anomalous dimension diverges, and this divergence is controlled by a constant in front that depends on the coupling constant, and it's called the light-like cusp anomaly, or simply the cusp anomaly. And these two are related. That's what Korchensky and Marchesini argue, and the same turns out to be true for n-equal 4 superiorized mills and in ADS-CFT. So let me remind you a little bit how that works. So you have a twist two operator. It's an operator of this type. These are scalar fields, for example, and these are derivatives, which is this means that they are traceless and symmetrized. And you want to compute the anomalies of this operator in the field theory. And I'm going to describe all this, all the calculation. I have some simple steps here just to give an idea that it's not completely straightforward. And so what you do is you contract this with an arbitrary constant light-like vector. Since this is all the same vector, this picks up the symmetric part. And since delta squared is zero, it picks up the traceless part. So this just contains this guy here. And then you compute the matrix element of this guy between two single partial states of this field phi with momentum p. P squared is zero because this is massless, so you compute on shell, and delta squared is zero. So the only Lorentz invariant here is p delta. So you have this p delta to the power s from conformal symmetry plus some extra dependence on the scale here because of the anomalous dimension of the operator O. And this lambda is a UV cutoff, and mu is an infrared cutoff. And you want to compute this number gamma s up here. And what you notice is that if you sum all these guys here, this with different s, this is just the expansion of a Wilson loop, which extends, so you split the two phis along a lie-like line, which is given by delta. And this is the gauge invariant operator if you insert a lie-like line there. And this expansion gives you the all these operators. So you just need to compute the expectation value of this operator with the lie-like line there here to compute all this at the same time. Now, when you want to look at very large s, you are looking at one can see that corresponds to very large p times delta. And I'm going to be a little bit naive, but that corresponds essentially to large p. And in that limit, you can replace these guys by Wilson lines. So you get a lie-like Wilson lines like this, and you get two cusps. So this guy has an anomalous dimension that is controlled by this cusp anomaly that I mentioned before. And then you relate that to this expansion, and from that you extract that these guys are related to this gamma cusp. So it's a slightly elaborated reasoning, but which is, as I said, proposed by Korchensky and Marchesini, and this is slightly simpler than what they did, because in a conformal theory, you don't have to deal with the running of a coupling. So you just work it much more easily. And this is the one loop diagram that compute this stuff. And these three give the same for large spin. Okay, so in the string side, you have to compute both things also at the same to compare them. And the twist-two operators were computed by Gapser and Kleeman and Polyakov corresponds to a, for large spin, to a string that extends from one end to the other of ADS and rotates like this. And it has a very simple equation for large spin in global coordinates. It's just rho equals sigma, so it goes from side to side. And t equals tau, and it rotates. And it's given by this equation in embedding coordinates, which are, I don't put here the two other coordinates that don't play any role. So this from for this embedding coordinates, this is just the equation. For the twist-two operators, for the cusp anomaly, sorry, you have also compute some surface that in this embedding coordinates is given by this simple equation. And in this coordinate psi is given by that, which I wrote some time ago. So you compute this cusp, and you compute this, and the thing agrees, as Korchensky and Marchesini said they should. It also agrees here in n equals 4. And one can also see that these two should agree directly in the string side by considering the equation of the cusp. And if you do just a 45 degree rotation in embedding coordinates, you can see that the equation for this surface looks like this. And as I said, the equation for the rotating string looks like this. So you see that you just can, if you could change 0 and 2, then the two are the same. But 0 and 2 appear with a different sign here. So what you do is you do a weak rotation multiplied by I. Unfortunately, the I cancels on both sides, and you get that these two surfaces map to each other. And this is a trivial geometric relation. And as many times in ADS-CFT, you have some complicated thing in field theory. And it becomes trivial when you see it from the string side. So if you want to look for something for short strings, it might be useful to look start by the string side. That might be much easier. Let me do a digression about scattering amplitudes, which I'm not going to talk about, but I need something about T-duality, as I mentioned at the beginning. So in the field theory, as I said, these twist-two operators are important. The cusp anomaly is important for deep inelastic scattering. And in equal 4 is also important, and Freddy Kachas is an expert in that, and he did many of these developments that started with, I'm just simply this BDS formula that shows that this cusp anomaly plays a role also in the scattering amplitudes in n equals 4. And I want to discuss more the string side, which was discussed by Aldaya Maldacena. And what they said is that these gluons that you want to compute scattering amplitude of are correspond to open string coming out from the horizon. These open strings scatter. And they use the duality to map this problem to compute the problem of computing Wilson loops with light-like casts. And there was a lot of development of that. For example, there is this recent paper by Basso, Severa, and Vieira where they built a bridge, I believe, between these two by computing this for any value of the coupling, at least in certain limits. So they can compute for any value of lambda. But the only thing I want to take from this is very important, of course, but the only thing I wanted to take from here is this t-duality, which I want to use. So what is this t-duality? So this t-duality, I think, was probably first used by Karosh and Seidlin, just as the usual t-duality to simplify the string action. But when Alday and Maldacena used it in this context of the scattering amplitudes, people start doing perturbative calculations in the field theory, and they realized that this was more than just a t-duality in string theory, that there is a deeper relation between the field theory, the Wilson loops, and the scattering amplitudes. And this was made precise by Berkowitz and Maldacena, and Beiser, Ricci, Seidlin, and Wolf. And what they did is they complemented this t-duality with a novel fermionic t-duality that mapped the n equals 4 with 5 form flux. Instead of mapping it to a axiom flux, I mean to the instantons, it maps back to a 5 form flux. So you find a mapping between ADS5 cross S5 and with 5 form to itself, or equivalent n equals 4 to itself in a sort of momentum position duality. And this is valid in the planar limit. So this is the kind of t-duality that I want to use. And let me describe how that works. It's just in the bosonic part. So you have a metric which is like this, and this has translation symmetry in x mu. So when there is translation symmetry, we can do t-duality. So we can have the action of the string, and the equation of motion, let's say, for one of the x mu's is like this. And this equation of motion can be simply solved if we say that this thing is the tau derivative of some x tilde, and this is a sigma derivative of some x tilde, then this commutation of derivative solves this equation. However, this is not arbitrary, because if I multiply this guy by z squared, I get this sigma x mu. So this guy here should be d sigma x mu, and this guy here should be d tau x mu. So if I derive this with respect to sigma and this with respect to tau, I should get equal, both things equal. And if I, this looks a lot like that, if I replace z tilde by 1 over z, I see that x tilde, z tilde obey the same equation as the x's. I have to check the equation for z and also the equation for and the constraints, but everything works. And that means that if you have a solution here in terms of x and z, you can map it to a solution in terms of x tilde and z tilde, and it will solve the same equations of motion. Okay, so this is let me go back then to the relation between local operators and Wilson loop. As I said, this, we saw the GKP string is very long, so it's a far from BPS state. And one can think what happens if you take the same, okay, their solution is for any S, so you can take the S very small and see what happens if the S is small, if there is some relation with some Wilson loop. And I'm not going to discuss that later, but I'm going to show that it was suggested in the literature that this indeed, there could be some relation. And it goes like this. There is a very nice calculation by Basso and also by Gromov, where they consider the how does the energy of this string or the anomalous dimension of the corresponding operator grows like s for small s and for arbitrary twist j. J can be interpreted as a momentum in the phi sphere. And Basso conjectured this formula and it was derived also by Gromov later. And this function here has this form in terms of Bessel functions. And obviously, the very interesting thing here is that this is supposed to be valid for any value of the coupling constant lambda, the Toft coupling in the planar limit. So this is just a relation for local operators. Now, naively, one can say, okay, if this the light-like cast is like an infinite angle corresponding for infinite s, what happens if the angle is small? I mean, the angle small means that the cast is almost straight. Maybe that has something to do with this. And Correa, Hen, Maldacena, and Sever, and Dracker and collaborators looked at the cusp anomaly for small angle, also at all values of the coupling. And they found this relation of Bessel functions that looks, ratio of Bessel functions that looks a lot like this, but you need to put here j equals 1, which is not obvious why you want to put j equals 1. And as I said, this is the expansion near the straight lines. But there seems to be some relation, and they already said that, between these two calculations. And it's suggested because this is small s and small angle, so one can say maybe there is something there. I want to emphasize that for the moment we use this as a motivation for what I'm going to say later, but I'm not going to explain why there is this apparent coincidence. So I'm just saying that this is a motivation for what I'm going to discuss later. Another observation, perhaps more obvious, is that the string action is the same for the closed and open strings. It just changes the boundary conditions. So one can find solutions for small strings using, well, not only this rotating string, but many more generic strings using Riemann theta functions associated with some spectral curve, which is an hyperelliptic curve, satisfying this lambda to lambda bar relation for the reality condition. And this, you can do this, use the same spectral curve for closed and open strings. For closed strings, this was described by Dorey and Vicedo for the strings actually moving in S5, and Shevik, Ji, and Dorey, Lossi. There are many papers on how to do this for small strings, or, well, it doesn't have to be small. I mean, it could be large, but strings moving inside ADS, that's what I mean. And if they touch the boundary, we looked recently with a student, and indeed the same curves you can use with the zeta functions to find Wilson loops for strings that move in ADS, but they are open strings that end in the boundary. And this also suggests from the string side, as I said, usually from the string side is easier, that there is some relation between the two types of things, operators, which are related to closed strings, and Wilson loops, which are related to open strings. Okay, so with Arcadia, we decided to take a closer look, and there is an obvious relation between short strings and Wilson loops, which is this T-duality that was used by Aldai and Maldacena for the open string. So in the spirit of difference, if you have an open string coming out from the horizon, we will map to some Wilson loop because Z, it's obvious. I said that the T-duality maps Z tilde to Z. The horizon is at Z equals infinity, and the boundary is at Z equals zero. So interchange is boundary and horizon. So if you have, instead of open string, you have a closed string ending at the horizon, it will also be mapped to a Wilson loop. And the state of the string as it crosses the Poincaré horizon will be mapped to the shape of the Wilson loop. So there is, this provides an obvious relation between short strings and Wilson loops. And we decided that it was, okay, non-trivial in some way, that we should try to explore it a little bit more. So, and let me give another way of motivating the same idea. So this is another way where I might be interested in doing the same thing. And I guess it was discussed yesterday by Xinyin, this type of diagram. So you have a global ADS and you insert four operators in the boundary. For example, these two create two strings. The closed strings scatter and go back to the boundary and are absorbed by those operators. And you can ask how that looks in a Poincaré space. And you may think that in Poincaré, you just have to insert four operators in the plane, and you should, or in R3,1, and compute that correlation function. And that's true if these four operators fall in the same, in the boundary of the Poincaré patch that you are using. But if one operator falls somewhere else, then in the boundary, you will only find three of those operators. And what means that one of the strings escape through the horizon. So the Poincaré observer thinks that one of the strings is gone. And this is a picture of that. So two strings go here, one goes to the boundary, and one goes away. How do you represent that in the boundary? Well, what happened from the boundary guy, a Poincaré guy, is that there was some radiation to infinity that escaped. And how you do you characterize this radiation? And one way to characterize it is by this thing I was saying. So this Wilson loop crosses the horizon in some state, and that corresponds to some operator in the T-dual theory. So that's a very precise statement, but it's not, I have to say, not completely useful, because we don't know how to compute correlators between operators in the n equal 4 and operators in the T-dual n equal 4. So, but that's just a problem to understand better that relation, and perhaps this will help understand that T-duality relation. But if you had that these operators were inserted like in some other path here and then recovered far in the future here, then all strings will be coming out from the past horizon and then it will scatter and go to the future horizon. And when I do T-duality, I will only have correlators of Wilson loops in the n equal 4 theory. So I will not have any mixed correlators. And that means that I could compute this type of scattering just by computing correlators of irregular correlators of usual Wilson loops in n equals 4, at least at the planar level. So that might be another motivation to study exactly which Wilson loops I have to put. Suppose I have some state here, which operators I have, which Wilson loops I have to put to compute such a correlation function. So this is another motivation to study this relation. Okay, so let's study that relation and let's consider. In what sense?
They will cross the horizon in some random shapes, right? A bit random, so when you will map them to what kind of shapes of the multiple vehicles, it's like four of them with very complicated.
Ah, they could, no, but I could say this, I want this two with some specific state. So in the field, in the string theory, you could, I mean, depends on how you define this, but in the. Ah, yes, okay, if I do that, I don't know. Yeah, so I know if I do that, you have to integrate over all paths, and I should integrate over all possible things here. But one thing you could do, if you don't want to do that, is to say, I mean, the usual spirit, you can have some strings and evolve like this, and you just start at the horizon with some particular state, and then you say, okay, then you will integrate over all intermediate state if you want to compute the original thing. But this is the guy that will map to the Wilson loop. Now, in Lycon gauge, okay, this is, if this were flat space, in Lycon gauge, this would be, for example, x plus equals 0. That's how you usually do in Lycon gauge. And this will be x minus equals 0, which will be some constraint that you can apply to the state and give you some kind of boundary state here. And this will be the usual. The usual state in Lycon gauge are at x plus equals 0, for example. But then at x minus equals 0, is x minus is this given by the constraints and is some operator. And I think you can find those. So in flat space, I think one can define scattering like this. So it's not in Lycon gauge. I don't know about the superstring. I mean, there is a lot of stuff. But in principle, I think they are well defined. I don't know if one can compute them. But I'm just using this as, again, as motivation. But it's a good point. Then, okay, so. The only thing I'm going to do is to study some examples of how this works. And one is, as I said, we want to study near BPS strings. So the BPS strings are massless strings. And I'm going, when you have a massless string, it moves at the speed of light. And there are two possible massless geodesics. One is the ADS massless geodesics, which is just string moving radially at the speed of light, or a point like string moving at the speed of light. And has this equation in a conformal gauge, or and in the other case is the ADS massive geodesic, which is massless because it's rotating on the sphere, which I already mentioned. And I mean, this kappa has some, one can rescale it, but it has some meaning. If you say that sigma goes from 0 to 2 pi, for example, then you cannot rescale tau anymore. Or you can say that you can rescale kappa and say that the length of the string is. Something. So this has some meaning here. But I'm going to study these two geodesics. This one is trivial, so I guess you probably know what this gives. This just gives, okay, let me do this. So you have a T and Z. These are the coordinates in a Poincaré space, the equation for the lilac geodesic. And the roots of T duality are like this. D tau T is minus 1 over tau squared, and Z is 1 over kappa tau. So you have tau squared here. So this is constant. It's just kappa. And d tau is 0, so t tilde is just kappa sigma. And z tilde is just 1 over z, so it's kappa tau. So you just get the straight line Wilson loop. Here I like to interchange tau and sigma, so that but tau and sigma has no physical meaning, but I prefer tau to be time-like and sigma to be space-like, so I interchange them after the t duality. And this is just the straight line Wilson loop that I said before, and maybe probably people already knew this. And it's easy to guess that this BPS Wilson loop maps to this BPS Wilson loop here. Now, I think it's less trivial. I don't know if you can guess. Okay, I have a picture here. So the point-like string moves radially at the speed of light. Remember, this is time. And it maps in Poincaré space, the geodesic looks like this. And if I do T-duality, I get this half plane here. And as I said, this is more or less obvious. But I don't know if you can guess what is the t-dual of the BMN Wilson loop, the BMN geodesic. So the BMN geodesic is just sitting at the center, and it crosses the past horizon and the future horizon at these two points. So when you do T-duality, you will expect a Wilson loop with two lines, one corresponding to this intersection and one to that. And let's see what Wilson loop is that. So we have in T and Z in a Poincaré patch, this geodesic looks like something that comes close to the boundary and goes back to the horizon, and it has this equation, and tau here runs from pi from 0 to pi over j. That means that this geodesic in Poincaré patch lives only for this time. And if you do the tau sigma, it's again, so the tau of this is one, the cotangent is 1 over sine squared, but you get sine squared on top, so this is constant. So tau is equal again to j sigma, z tilde is just the inverse of that, and phi was the angle of the sphere. Remember that this angle, there is this, this angle here, and this doesn't have, there is no t-duality on the sphere, so nothing happens to phi. And so this is the t-dual of the BMN geodesic, but as I said, we would like to interchange sigma and tau, so tau is time-like, and you get something like this. And what is this Wilson loop? So this Wilson loop touches the boundary at sigma equals 0 and pi over j, so remember that sigma and tau are interchanged, so it has the same thing here. So it's a Wilson loop that looks like this. So it has two parallel lines, which are opposite, but they're on top of each other because there is no separation x here. Z goes up and down, so it goes up and down like that, and phi goes from 0 to pi. So these two Wilson lines are opposite, so this doesn't seem BPS, but they are at opposite poles of the phi sphere. And if you do that, that Wilson loop is BPS and is the t-dual of, as I said, the BMN geodesic. So this Wilson loop should have many of the properties of the BMN state, and it would be interesting to study, and I'm going to describe some of those things later. But let me remind you why this is a BPS Wilson loop. So there are several ways to do it. For example, if you do it, this is a Euclidean. This Wilson loop is similar to this cusp. It can be mapped to a cusp, and the cusp has angle pi or zero, depending on how you define it, but it's a very sharp cusp. But there is a jump also on the sphere part. And when the angle you jump in the sphere and the angle you jump in space are the same, the cusp is BPS. There is even a simpler way to look at this, and is to realize that if you define the coordinate, radial coordinate r as 1 over z, this is 1 over sine. So if you do r times sine of phi, it's a constant. And in the transfer space, that's the equation of a straight line. So if you go back to the distributing picture, you have a distributing like this, 1, 2, 3. And then you have just the fundamental string stretched along some direction 4, just completely straight, and separated along some direction 5. But this is s dual to d3d1 with 4 Neumann Dirichlet directions, and therefore it's BPS. And this line remains straight. If you this distributing becomes large n, this kind of grows into ADS, but this thing still remains straight in the transverse plane, as I discussed before, is r sine of phi constant. So that means that this distance is constant. Also, you see that the string goes from one pole of the sphere here to the other pole, so phi goes from 0 to pi, and there is a minimum value of r, which is a maximum value of z. So it goes like that. So, and this, as I said, this is BPS. And this is the same, for example, when one looks at these seven brains with mesons and things like that, you also have this kind of trace thing. So this is what I'm saying is that this string is just the dual or the t-dual of the BMN state and should have many of its properties. Okay, so let's look now at fluctuation. So let's try to do a little bit more. And so we have first a point-like string moving in ADS at the speed of light. And you can look at fluctuations of that string. And those fluctuations, we just see flat space. And if you want to be fancy, you can say that the Penrose limit of ADS is just flat space, or you can just say that this is okay, flat space, because the string is very small. So in flat space, we know how to solve the string equations of motion, so let me be a little bit more formal. So I have this ADS here, and I expand around x0 equals 1, and all the other coordinates, I say I have a size epsilon, so I don't, the fluctuations are small. And x naught will be of order epsilon squared from this equation. So I'm going to ignore that, and I'm going to consider only fluctuations of the other coordinates, and that gives me the metric reduces to flat space. And if I use Lycon gauge, I know that I can solve the fluctuations of the string just by putting a superposition of a left and right moving waves on the worksheet. And it will become obvious later that tau equals zero is the horizon of the Poincaré patch. So classically, if you want to know these two functions, you need to give two boundary conditions. For example, at tau equals zero, at the horizon, I can give the shape, which is the sum of the two functions, and I can give the momentum, which is the derivative of respect to tau, so it will be the difference. And that will give me, specify completely the state of the string at tau equals zero when it crosses the horizon. Yeah. It's just a, oops. It's just here. Yeah, I don't think it does very much, but. Yes, yes, it will. I mean, remember that for any J, the trajectory of the BMN is always the same. So the trajectory is just a circle. So this this geodesic for any J is the same geodesic. Yes, I think, but, okay, let me see. No, I think, I mean, in some sense you are right, but I think it maps in the following way. So here it's not obvious, but when you do t-duality, you are doing t-duality also in time. So when doing t-duality, so here you can rescale J apparently and it goes away, because you can rescale it in sigma and tau, so you can preserve conformance in it. However, yeah, you cannot do it before. Yes, you cannot do it before. But it's, so here, I'm going to say something. But here you cannot do it for what I said. If you keep the sigma periodicity fixed. Now here it seems that you can do it because it's sigma and tau j. But what happens? So the sigma periodicity, which I'm not drawing here, becomes periodicity in tau because you are doing. Because I interchange in sigma and tau first, but also because you are doing t-duality in time. So in time, you have that the energy of the initial string becomes periodicity in time later. So you will have a Wilson loop, which is periodic in time, and the periodicity of that Wilson loop is the energy of the original string. Now this will mean that this tau will have some periodicity, but since tau is just tau, that you don't see that, or you don't see that. But if you have a fluctuation, this fluctuation will have to respect the periodicity of sigma initially, and that means that the t-dual Wilson loop, we have a precise periodicity in t tilde, and that will give you what j is. Yeah. Okay. No, the sphere we don't t-dualize. So phi is just seems to be the same. But what he said, yeah. Yeah, now it's stretched halfway. Yeah. Oh, no, because this is stretched between 0 and pi, and that seems puzzling because I can rescale everything by j. But I think there is a periodicity in t tilde which is associated with this. So before sigma was between 0 and 2 pi, so tau should go from 0 to pi. So this t tilde go from 0 to 2 pi j. Now, this doesn't seem to mean anything here because this is periodic with any period. But if I put a fluctuation on the initial string, then it has to respect this periodicity in sigma between 0 and 2 pi, and then it has to respect the periodicity here. So I think if you don't put fluctuations, you don't see it. I mean, but maybe there is a way to see it, but I think it's clear here that j goes away. So it's like you have in the t-dual, you have this Wilson loop, and then you compute fluctuations, and you say, okay, I'm going to compute fluctuations only with the given periodicity. And that is fixing the J that you. It means that I allow that this to this Wilson line. I say okay, I will consider a wavy line now instead of straight. And this wavy line, it will have some periodicity. I'm not describing fluctuations like computing the one loop correction. I'm describing fluctuations in the sense that I want to change the Wilson loop with a wavy line or changing the angle on the sphere. And I'm going to allow only with some periodicity. And that periodicity will fix what J I was using before. But I think without that, I don't think I can see that. But, you know. I guess it doesn't look very convincing, but I think it's what happens. I mean, this you do this formula, and essentially, so it seems that this Wilson loop doesn't contain this information about J just by itself. Yeah. Yes. Ah, okay. No, but the thing is. Yeah, but no, the problem is if you look at this geodesic, suppose you look at this geodesic, as I say, is rotating, but J appears here and here. So remember, this is pi. So remember that here, from here to here, there is 2 pi, and from here to here is pi. And phi is equal to t. So in time pi, it can only go pi. So independently of J, it always goes pi. And that's why the T-dual Wilson loop also goes from pole to pole. Because although it's rotating in this time that I allow it to live in Poincaré, it only can go pi around the sphere. So that's independent of J. So if you wish it, if you increase J, as you say, it goes faster on the sphere, but it goes faster in time. Because the geodesic has J both. So if this is a geodesic, J sort of doesn't mean much. As I said, for a string, you consider the periodicity of the string between sigma and 2 pi, then J has some sort of meaning, but that becomes periodicity in tau here. That for the Wilson loop, as it is, it doesn't seem, I mean, it's periodic with any period. So I think you have to put some fluctuation. That's my interpretation. Okay, so we said that going back to the other Wilson loop, which is the point-like string, you get a sum of left and right moving waves, and that gives you the any oscillation of the string as you consider in flat space. And that seems to be, and this is the picture. So you have the short string going into the horizon. As it crosses the horizon, it has some shape and has some momentum density, and that determines these two functions and determines the complete solution at the classical level. Now, this seems to create some kind of problem because we said that this is T-dual to this Wilson loop, and now we want to deform this Wilson loop, and that means that we want to deform this worksheet, and this worksheet sees the whole ADS space. It doesn't see flat space only. So, and this is seen clearly by writing fluctuations of that worksheet, and it gives this action. If you compute the equation of motion for this action, is not the equation of motion in flat space. So you could put some boundary conditions at sigma equals 0, which is the boundary, but it will not obey the equations of motion of flat space, and that seems to be in contradiction with what I was saying here and this T-duality, but the answer is trivial, actually. It was already pointed out by Mikhailov long ago that you can solve those equations that I had before, so these equations by this change of variables or this ansatz, you can go from this axis to this axis and with this sigma here, and you can see that the equation for this x is actually the equation of motion in flat space and is solved by a left and right moving wave. So if you didn't know this, with this T-duality, you could just say, okay, if I solve in flat space, I can solve these equations, or you can just look at these equations as Mikhailov did and find these solutions. And again, at a sigma equals 0, this goes away, and you get these two functions. The sum of the two functions is the shape of the Wilson loop, is the boundary condition for x. And if you want to look at the difference, you have to derive this three times, as Mikhailov pointed out, because if you derive once, this cancels because of this sigma here. And if you derive twice, you get the sum. So if you derive three times, you get the difference. So this is the boundary condition for the Wilson loop. And the reason we have this, these two things is because this is one of these mixed correlators that I mentioned before, which is not easy to understand because this a difference. This is inside, and this is nice because it just gives you a Wilson loop. But this guy also touches the boundary, and that means that the dual Wilson loop goes to infinity, and either you put some boundary condition for the Wilson loop at infinity, or some initial condition, or some extra boundary condition in the boundary as this one. So this is this kind of mixed correlators, but on the other hand, at the classical level, it's very easy to analyze. And if you use the rules of t-duality, as I'm going to do in the next slide, you find that this x and the y are not the same. Remember, y is the shape of the closed string, and x is the shape of the Wilson loop, but the shape of the Wilson loop is the integral of the shape of the closed string. So the closed string crosses the horizon in some state with some shape, and the dual Wilson loop has this other shape given by this integral. And the way to see that is to go to Poincaré coordinates. And OK, there is an ambiguity on how you choose the Poincaré coordinates. But we chose them precisely so that the tau equals zero, as I said, is the horizon. And you can see that one, why this was tau. So when tau is zero, z is infinity, which is the horizon. X naught is x0 over this. But remember that x0 was 1 up to order epsilon squared. So you get that z and tau are the same. And then you get some fluctuations. So here it's convenient to rescale the coordinates by epsilon. And here, I forgot an epsilon here. So that there is an epsilon here that tells you that these are small fluctuations. And so you get back the original, the Wilson loop, which is a straight line Wilson loop, plus some small fluctuations of order epsilon. And if you do the rules of t-duality, this tau, tau tilde is sigma, so you get the straight line Wilson loop as before, and you get some extra equation for the fluctuation. So this sigma of tau of x tilde, you have to take the tau derivative there, divide, multiply by tau squared, and if you do that, you get this combination. Now remember that tau equals zero is the boundary here because z tilde is zero, so this part goes away, and you say that xi, the shape of the Wilson loop, that means the xi at the boundary is the integral of this y with respect to sigma. Now this formula here says tau because, as I said, I always interchange sigma and tau later, so this will become sigma, this will become sigma, and so on. But it's just that formula. So you see that there is very simple relation between this shape of the string and the shape of the corresponding Wilson loop. Now, since you can map do this mapping, I mean, it's obvious that you can map all from one to the other. Let me discuss first there is one thing that the area of the Wilson loop, the expectation value of the Wilson loop, doesn't seem to have any obvious interpretation in the short string side. But let me just, Mihailo computed the expectation value of the Wilson loop, and that gives this, can be written in terms of velocity at the boundary, at the velocity of the quark, as it, so originally it's at rest, but then I let it fluctuate, so it has some velocity. And there is acceleration that I divide into the plus and minus by taking these two functions in some obvious way, plus and minus. The second derivative, I call it a plus and the other a minus. And there is this formula for the expectation value of the Wilson loop. You can also compute the energy. So one interpretation that is well known, if you shake the quark, you create radiation. And that's interpreted as creating oscillations of the string. And that means you are injecting energy or receiving energy from the string. And you can compute the total energy that you send into the string. This is a minus square, so it's not a to the minus 2. So it's minus square minus a plus square. And you can see that if for this particular solution, this maps to the level matching condition of the short string. So the total energy for all time that you, well, you should integrate actually over one period. But I put here generically from minus to plus infinity. The total energy, because okay, I should allow only oscillations which have some period in time, the same as before, because that corresponds to the period in sigma. And this, the level matching condition gives zero. But since I know these two functions, I can put a plus here. And if you put a plus, you don't get zero, obviously. And you get the sum of two positive numbers. And this turns out to be the energy of the original closed string. We're always working with classical solutions, so we are not, I mean, we can discuss, but I don't have any clear interpretation at the quantum level how to work with this. But I mean, well, you can integrate over, well, I can, as I say, I have several things I can say, but These calculations are all classical. So this is the total energy of the, so you can compute the energy of the string from computing this type of radiation. So this is not the energy radiated by the quark, but if you separate the radiated, the energy radiated from by the quark between left and right movers and you add it here, or subtract it in principle, you get the energy of the string. This quark, you can sort of shake it in circles if you wish, and that means that you can inject spin into the string. And if you compute how much spin you inject into the string, you see that it's precisely the spin that the original closed string had. So you can map things from the Wilson loop to the closed strings. And for example, I think computations, for example, what's the lowest energy for a given spin can be mapped into if I, the quark radiates energy, how is the maximum spin that it can radiate, and things like that. So one can get mapping between computations for short strings or operators to computations for Wilson loops. Okay, and let me look at the second case, which is a BMN geodesic. So one can do oscillations of that string, but there is a different way to compute fluctuations of the BMN geodesic, which is not to compute small fluctuations, but to compute what one can call slow fluctuations. So you allow the string to fluctuate as much as you want, but in a motion which is low, compared to the fast motion of the center of mass, which is moving at the speed of light. And that slow fluctuations, which technically means that you just put the d tau derivative of x small, and you do the leading order on that, are governed by a certain sigma mod that you can derive from the string action. And it has the interpretation of also of a sigma mod for the spin chain that describes this operator. So this was the work of Minahan and Sarembo in terms of the spin chains. So this x to the j means that, for example, in the spin chain language, you put all the spins up. And if you put, I don't know, some other scalar field y, it's like spins down. But you can start flipping the spins here, and you get spin waves. And these spin waves have some energy. And that was Bernstein, Maldacena, and Anastase, the first to point out that. And the dispersion relation is k squared, which is typical of a ferromagnetic system. And if you have more generic low energy states, you have spin waves. So you have, and that means this slow motion here translating to very long wavelength in the spin chain that you can then consider continuous. And it's described by this sigma model that I said also this follows from the studying the motion of a string when the motion is slow. And I consider only motion on a three sphere instead of the S5. And that shows, for example, this is the direction in which, so in the direction in which the spin point is a point in a two sphere. So each of these is one of these spins. So it goes like this. If you put a lot of spins, all this is ferromagnetic, so they tend to be close to each other, and they describe the shape of a string, which is a string that you have in the bulk. Okay, so we want to show that this lambda leaf field model also describes some kind of fluctuations of this Wilson loop. And remember that when I say fluctuations, I always mean I change the shape of the Wilson loop, and I look for the worksheet that allows me to compute that Wilson loop. I'm not computing one loop corrections to this by integrating over fluctuations. Okay, so I have this Wilson loop that I already said before, and I want to do fluctuations which are near BPS. That was the important property of this long wavelength stuff, that locally, since this doesn't change very much, is BPS. And I want to do the same here. So to preserve this to be BPS, I should not allow this to wander very much from each other, the quark and anti-quark. And I always should have them on opposite poles of the sphere. So I cannot allow this sort of go around as much as I want. But one guy and the other, the quark and the anti-quark, has to be always almost at opposite poles of the S5. And I'm going to describe those type of Wilson loops. Okay, so how do we do that in practice? So we put coordinates, these are embedding coordinates for a three sphere, and I have this angle phi. So if phi 1 goes from 0 to pi, all you can see that, jumps by pi, or goes from 0 to pi, well, that's the same. All these change signs. So if independently of phi 1 and psi 2, all change signs. So if phi 1 goes from 0 to pi, and the others change very little, then the two endpoints will be almost at opposite sides of the sphere. So this is the kind of fluctuations that I want to describe. So I have the ADS part, I have the S3, and I have this just the same worksheet that I had before. So this d this guy here, which was a straight line, and I allow only fluctuations on the phi sphere, on the, but it's just a three sphere, sorry. And so phi 1 is sigma, that ensures the 0 to pi, and allows some fluctuation, and a fluctuation here. And as I said, this can have any value, so phi and psi 2 don't have to be small, so I say call them fluctuations, but they are not small fluctuations. They can vary as much as you want, but what has to happen is that psi and phi 2, they have more or less the same value at opposite sides of the string. So when the sigma goes from it changed from minus pi over 2 to pi over 2, then psi has to have the same value on each side. So these values are the boundary conditions. So at the two endpoints of the string are minus pi over 2 and pi over 2. And if I specify the boundary conditions, that specify the Wilson loop. And I want to say that the jump is very small. And if it's very small, then the two endpoints can, as I said, rotate as much as I want. The psi and phi 2 can be anything. But when phi 1 goes from minus pi over 2 to pi over 2, you are at opposite poles. And that this fluctuates very small, it means that the sigma derivatives are small. And one can see that so keeping the leading order in sigma derivatives, the constraints determine this function chi1, and the equations of motion then reduce to this. And these equations of motion give you the Landau lifting model, the same as before. After you've multiplied this by 2, you had to do the same also before. So you have this sigma model, but you notice that you get the tau and sigma interchange. So if the spin chain before was a spin chain that evolved in tau like this, now you're rotating like 90 degrees and you're evolving that way. So the sigma model is the same, but physically there is this rotation, and that's the interpretation of how the Wilson loop works. So near BPS fluctuations of the Wilson loop are described by the same sigma model, but you interchange sigma and tau. As I said, tau has a meaning because it's this direction here. Okay, so I'm out of time and also out of slides. So the conclusions is that we review the relation between twist two operators and the Lie-like cusps, and which provides a relation between local operators and Wilson loops, and describes that it was suggested in the literature that could also be true for short strings and near BPS strings, which should be interesting because, as I said, a lot of ADS-CFT progress was done studying these strings. And there is a very simple way, maybe obvious way, to relate those small strings to the Wilson loop, which is apply the T-duality of Aldai and Maldacena to closed strings instead of open strings. And okay, hopefully it's not extremely obvious, but okay, we discussed two simple examples, and that gives the trivial example of the point-like string, but also we went to discuss fluctuations, and we show how the state of the string as it crosses the horizon maps to the shape of the Wilson loop. And okay, I didn't want to enter into any discussion about horizons and black holes and things like that. I'm not sure we can say very much about that, but it could be interesting also for these types of ideas. And I think it allows new possibilities to use target ADS-CFT, integrability, and things like that. For example, study more this type of Wilson loops in the same way as BMN. And I didn't discuss very much about the field theory, so I guess we leave that for later or something. Yes.
Can you discuss a bit
the no. No. The only thing is something. For example, there is this issue in the field theory that in this paper by Correa, Gen, Maldacena, Sever, they discuss the cusp. The cusp anomaly when phi is equal to theta is BPS, so this is zero. But when phi is close to theta, this is small, and it has this form where this B is a ratio of Bessel functions. But this B is a function of lambda tilde, which is something like this. So when phi is going to pi, this lambda tilde becomes very small. But this is not, this is also zero, but there is a finite limit here. And this is very reminiscent of the BMN thing. So remember that in BMN you have this lambda over J, that when J is large. So I guess you were telling me these limits do not commute. I guess I don't know if that's what you said yesterday. Ah, okay. You told me something doesn't commute. I don't know, but okay. Maybe okay. So. I think this is like it's very reminiscent of the BMN limit, and perhaps at one loop. Well, this thing I said about matching the actions of the string works at one loop, but at higher two loops. But at higher loops, the expansion is not much. It doesn't match anymore because of this. I guess you cannot take. Suppose lambda is large. I can say I can take. Okay, this I was discussing in the BMN case. Here I can say if lambda is large, I can still take phi very close to pi and make this guy small. So this seems to be a perturbative expansion, and I may hope to compare with a small lambda. Yes, so the thing is that this your formula here only works for theta equals to phi. So if I want phi close to pi, I have to put theta equals to pi too. And that's precisely the Wilson loop, the BMN Wilson loop that I was calling because it's a very sharp angle. So this is precisely the case we are discussing here. Well, no, you take, okay, well, you're taking phi and theta both close to pi. No. So you are a little bit away from BPS, and that's what you want to describe. Well, they should be the same order. So you have one epsilon, but what I'm saying is that you allow, because I want to allow the phi and theta to change as a function of the position. So I don't know if this formula how that works, but I want to allow phi and theta to change as a function of tau, but always staying, for example, theta equals to pi means that the two lines almost touch each other, they are parallel, and phi equals to pi means that they are opposite in the sphere. So the thing I was discussing before was theta always pi, and phi close to pi, which I think is what you said, but I could take slightly more generic. But suppose that if I could do that, theta pi and phi close to pi, that will be enough to, I think that's in the regime where you want to reproduce this from the field theory, but I don't know if that can be done. Yeah, I didn't look that. There are some extra divergences and one has to be more careful. So this is the only thing I have to say. I mean, we start looking at this, and but I don't have any result that I can share about this with the side. But the idea, again, is to do something similar to BMN. In BMN, you have this lambda or lambda squared over J. And when J was large, you can consider that as an effective coupling that was small and try to see what happened. And you have the same type of small coupling here. But I think this is just... I mean, this is just another thing showing that the two things are related, that the BMN and this kind of Wilson loop are very much related.
Can you understand why this is
No, no, I don't know because. Yes, yes, so, but it didn't work so. Yeah, that's what we thought, but it's not so easy apparently. So, but yeah, I think it should be contained in this, but I mean, the first thing we thought is, okay, we have this relation, so we explain everything, but but it's not so easy. So, I think one, but I think it should be contained there. Yes, as you said, it seems that that's there because you have a short string, which is this basso, and for small spin, and this is with the BMN, so this is T-dual to do this, and so it should work, but. Yeah, I guess. But then, I mean, you have to look at their formula with. One thing is that the anomalous dimension is the energy. That becomes the periodicity, which is a bit confusing. So you have to be careful because this T-duality doesn't map things so easily. So there is a map and one has to be more. For example, at the quantum level, I think there is this that Amit also discussed, is like displacement operators. I think these displacement operators of the Wilson loop should be like the momentum operators of the closed string, and one has to look at that. I mean, there is a lot of things. Yeah, I think we just started in some way. I mean, at the beginning, it seemed that, but I think that one can do a lot more on this. And we just did the first step, if you wish. which is not very much, but we are trying to say, okay, it's interesting to look at this more or less. And unfortunately, yeah, this relation is not the relation, as you said, this is not obvious how it follows from here. I think it should be contained, and that's what was our initial hope, but so this thing and that thing, how, I mean, this is a cusp anomaly for small phi, and that doesn't seem to have anything to do with what we are saying. But on the other hand, this, as I said, phi for us is pi, and theta is pi, but then you have the same function b, so there may be something there. But I don't think this, I mean, in principle, I have to say, I don't think this has anything to do with this, because this is a small angle, this is a small spin, but it's not true that they are related. But maybe they are related in the sense that this also appears when phi is equal to theta, you have the same function, that's already they say there. Maybe that's how it's more related. But. Yes, yes, yes. Now, we looked at that in this way that you did in the paper, by you can say that you emit this quantum of frequency omega, and then you can say, okay, suppose this is a gluon, so it also emits spin 1. And you compute the ratio of how much energy you emit against spin, and that agrees somehow with the Rayleigh trajectory or something like that. But so you could do that type of reasoning. I think it works, but it had to be, we didn't do with lambda. We did just I don't remember if you do a perturbative or something like that, but. Yes, yes. So you have this string with small spin, and as you said, you do T duality, and you get the Wilson loop that fluctuates, and then you have to be. But what I was saying, this Wilson loop, okay, probably the question is, can one use your formula to compute that particular Wilson loop, and what do you put here, and does that really map to the other? And yeah, I think. Yeah, it seems that we are lazy and we didn't do it, but we tried. I mean, and I think we are still trying. I mean, so I think we can might be able to do it. But at some point we said, okay, we already understand something, so let's do this. And we're continuing. I mean, this part of the lambda Liefeld model we didn't publish yet. This I don't have anything. As I say, in the field theory, we're still doing calculations, so maybe we can understand it, hopefully. But yeah, it seems that it's somewhat. I mean, okay, I cannot say, but yeah, it seems that it's sort of contained there. It may be that it's not. But again, yeah, so the question maybe is also how to use your formula exactly for this particular Wilson loops, and if it gives something. So if it applies directly to these Wilson loops, or you have to do something or compute something different. So it's not obvious that the Wilson loop that, the thing that Basso has maps to a Wilson loop with where you can apply this formula. But I think if you do at the classical level, everything should match. But when you start thinking about this, you have to be more careful, yeah, I guess. But I think maybe, yeah, I don't know. Well, but I think T-duality works at the planar level. It works for any value of the coupling somehow. You just have to have a map the Wilson loop and have a good way to compute the Wilson loop and a good way to compute the string. And I believe in Danish. Well, okay, it could be that the map to the shape of the string changes with the coupling. That I don't know. But I think T-duality breaks for 1 over n because there is some extra. Okay, I didn't say that, but. One can look at T-duality. I mean, the space is not compact, so there is no periodic coordinate. So one is doing T-duality on non-periodic coordinates, and there are some subtleties, and I have some slides on that. But essentially, this is from the paper, basically, of Berkowitz and Maldacena, where they say if you have handles, you have to add extra degrees of freedom, and then you can make it work, maybe order by order, I guess, but not. Generically, so, but I think for lambda it should be okay. I don't think. Yes, so as long as you are in a planar limit, I think you. Yeah, I don't think you need to be more careful than just mapping the... But it could be that the shape of the Wilson loop depends on lambda. That I don't know. The shape of the T2i Wilson loop might depend on lambda. I'm not sure why, but it could be. But if it doesn't, then you just need a good way to compute both sides for any lambda. And presumably this formula that you have might be good for the near BPS Wilson loop when phi is almost pi. Maybe one can apply it. But this is the cusp, so it's just one cusp. We have like a continuous cusp, so to say it. I mean, we have a two parallel lines, and there is a divergence at each point. No, it's just one cusp. So I don't know if you can use this directly.